I feel like just being here de-stresses us a little bit. Are you feeling a little bit less stress? Let me just pray for our time. Before we pray, let me just tell you a little bit about myself. My name is Denise Salen. This is my daughter, McKenna. This is our first retreat together. But my husband, Lee, and I have been at PBC for, pre-kids, so more than 20 years. And we started off at PBC way back when it was PBC Palo Alto, which is still there. And then we moved down to Cupertino. I have McKenna, she's 19. And then we have our son, Luke, who's 13. And I am a marriage and family therapist, and I work at Cupertino High School, and I work with at-risk kids. My job is counseling. So my background is in child development, and I started working in preschools and working with infants, toddlers. I really love that, and then I had the opportunity to go back and get my master's degree, and I did that in counseling, and I worked with high schoolers, and I found that I really liked high schoolers, much to my surprise, because before I had worked with them, they really intimidated me. But what I realized after I got to working with high schoolers was that they're very much like toddlers. They're just bigger bodies. And I think being a toddler is like the first adolescence, and then being a teenager is the second adolescence. But I like that energy they have. And it's hard to be a parent of a toddler, and it's hard to be a parent of a teenager. But I like that feistiness that they have and the pushback they give. You know, they want you, they don't want you. I think it's an exciting time to be involved in the life of either a toddler, a two-year-old, or an adolescent. So I've loved what I've done. I counsel part-time. I left teaching in the preschool. I try to hold a baby or play with a toddler whenever I can. Now that my kids are older, I guess I'm going to be looking forward to the grandparent stage. And then I also teach parenting classes. And Sharon and I talked about doing this workshop, and I really loved the whole theme of our weekend because I know it's something we could all relate to, busyness in life, stress. Sharon said, well, what would you like to talk about? And I said, well, stress, because we all know it really well. And when I think about busyness, I think it equals stress. So before we jump in, keep on coming in, but let me just start our time in prayer. Heavenly Father, thank you for such a beautiful place to come together and connect with each other, connect with you. And I just ask that you'd help us to quiet our hearts and learn from your word, from how you've taught us in our own experiences. We don't want to be busy. We want to accept the seasons of life, as Miriam was talking about, and be able, whatever they are, to accept them with gratitude, with peace, with knowing that you are there right with us. You never abandon us. We may feel like it at times. We may feel so stressed to the point where we feel alone. But we know that's not true, Father. So help us to settle our hearts, to learn how to be able to meet you in our everyday life. And we ask these things in Jesus' name. Amen. Okay, so we all know what stress is. I don't have to describe it. There used to be a commercial, this is going to date me. It was a Calgon commercial. It's kind of like a bath product. And in the commercial, there's a mom and she walks into her living room and the kids are having a pillow fight and they're screaming, they're having a great time. There's feathers all over the place. And she says, Calgon, take me away. And then the next scene, she's in a bathtub of bubble baths and she has no stress. And I have to admit that that's, when I am feeling under stress, that's what I want. I want a Calgon moment. I want to be transported out of my situation into a bubble bath, maybe without a husband and children, without a job. Maybe that bathtub is on the beach in Maui or something like that. But I think what we often want to do is we want to just get rid of our stress, just take it away. And then, though, when we really think hard about it, we can. And as Miriam said this morning, there are times in our life where you have a two-year-old. You have a three-year-old and a one-year-old. You have a five-year-old and a three-year-old and a one-year-old. You know, you can't, or you have a grouchy teenager, or your spouse just lost their job, or you have an ailing parent. There are times where we can't be taken away. We don't have a choice. Certainly there are times where we add to our busy schedule by putting more on our plate than we should, But many times, it's just life. And so what are we going to do? And what I really took heart from this morning that Miriam was talking about is that there are seasons. There are seasons of busyness, and we ought not to feel guilty about that. And there are seasons of quiet, and there are seasons of loneliness, and dry deserts, maybe when we feel disconnected from our friends, disconnected from the Lord, disconnected from our job, not feeling like we have a purpose in life. And there's all these kinds of seasons. And what I really took away this morning is that they all are from the Lord. There isn't one isn't better than the other, but in our mindset, we often think, I want the good times. I want the times where, you know, I can, when somebody says, how are you? I can say, good. Things are really smooth right now. I think on the flip side of that, though, when we do greet each other, like I noticed this weekend, you know, we'll say, hey, how are you doing? And that's such a hard question to answer if we really want to give somebody an honest answer. So oftentimes we say fine. But like Sharon was describing when she spoke at church announcing the retreat, sometimes our first word is busy or stressed. And when we hear that, we all nod to each other like, yeah, I know what you mean. And I worry sometimes that that's become the norm, that being busy and being stressed is the norm. And sometimes we do have to take a look at, is that healthy? Is the busyness that we're going through, is the stress that we're going through, is it normal? And when I talked about this description of this class, I did say that there is normal stress, and there's even stress that's good for us. So that's why we call this workshop stress, the good, the bad, and the ugly. But we often equate stress with bad. And a lot of what I'm going to be talking about today comes from this book called Stress-Free for Good by Fred Luskin and Kenneth Peltier. Kenneth Peltier is a MD, a doctor, and Fred Luskin is a PhD out of Stanford. And I first discovered Fred Luskin when I took a class from him at Santa Clara University. It was a class on forgiveness. I'm getting tangled up. And if you ever get a chance to hear Fred Luskin, sign up for the class. It's worth the money that they charge. I didn't think I needed to forgive anybody. I didn't feel like I held any grudges in my life, but he really showed me through this class what forgiveness is. He's not a Christian, but I tell you that as I listened to him talk about forgiveness, what it is and the steps to forgiving and how it impacts our health and our relationships, I thought I was hearing something out of the Bible. And in fact, one day I'd love to do a class on it, because everything he talked about in terms of the steps to forgiveness and how to forgive and the why of forgiving and what it does for us and what it does for others, I thought mirrored exactly the Lord's Prayer. So hold me to that. That would be a fun class to do. But then I saw that he did this book, Stress-Free for Good. And what I really found that was helpful is he comes from a bent that all that we do and think is connected with our physiology. And so today we're going to talk. Do I have any nurses or doctors here? Great. Okay, so maybe you can help back me up on some of this. But our physiology really plays into what goes into our minds. And I think you hear about this a lot, mindful meditation, things like that. And I see a lot of truth in it, especially when I work with my high school students, because they come in and we'll talk about how to manage their anger and get to class on time and manage their time so that they can do homework. And students I work with, they don't go to school, they're getting D's and F's in class, they do come from a troubled background. And, you know, we get together and they'll say, yeah, that's what I need to do, I'm so excited, I'm going to do it. And then the next day, I look on their attendance, and I look, and I see that they're suspended, and I look, and I find out why, and it's because they said blankety-blank to a teacher in class, or they brought a weapon to school, and I think, oh, what happened? What happened? You know, I just had them in my office the other day, and they said, yeah, I'm so excited to go on this field trip. My grades are up for the first time. I get a privilege. I've earned it. And then the next thing I know, they got suspended. They acted out. They did something, and I think, oh, we're starting from square one again. And as I've taken this class on forgiveness and stress, I come to learn that sometimes in our physiology, there's something that's wired for us to let go of what we know to be true and act on an impulse. And that's what stress tends to do with us. And I'm going to talk a lot about that. So let's see. Okay, so first of all, let's talk about stress That is good. Stress is actually just the natural way we gear up to meet life's demands. It's the way we react to all the challenges of our day-to-day existence. And if we look at stress that way, it's not so looming and awful. To get up in the morning, you need a little bit of stress to get you out of bed. To make breakfast, you need that hunger to stress you out to do something to get out of just sitting down and wasting the day away. You need a little bit of stress to get you going. When we got a puppy, our trainer said that she, in order to learn, to train her, she needed to experience a little bit of stress every day. Not a lot, so we weren't to expect her to learn how to sit and potty train and not bark and shake hands all in the same day. But every little bit of stress that we let her go through, that was how she was going to learn. And that's what stress actually does for us. So stress isn't the problem itself. It's how much stress you feel, how often you feel stressed, and what skills you have to deal with stress. And today I'm going to leave you with two skills that will really help not only manage stress, as I talked about this morning, but will bring, actually increase more joy, more love, more peace in your life. Stress energizes us and it improves our performance. For those of you who have played sports or get up to speak or make a presentation at work, or maybe you teach, you know that little butterfly you feel in your stomach? That's good stress. It gets your blood circulating. It gets you energized, ready to do. So my heart was racing before I came here. All kind of like from the morning when I woke up this morning, I felt a little bit of stress. It made me get out of bed early. But as the morning went on, I felt a little bit more because I knew I would be speaking. But it motivated me. It got me going to give me the energy to speak to you like this. Instead of like this, well, you know, which is more my temperament. So stress is good. It's given me some energy. It helps us meet the everyday demands of life. We talked about that. There's some times where stress is good in our life. For example, a wedding, a remodel, a move, a new job. Now, I know that you're thinking, especially those of you who've remodeled, are thinking, that I don't remember that being a good thing. But it's interesting that a neutral event, like a wedding that ought to be happy, can also be very, very stressful, or a remodel, or the birth of a baby. Those things are usually happy events in our life, but usually they're kind of mixed, right? And we'll talk about why that is. And third, the most important thing is that stress helps us to face a threat. And have you heard of the fight or flight response? So that fight or flight response is I think God wired that into us for our survival. So if you're hiking and you see a bear in the woods, your fight or flight response is going to turn on to make sure that you don't get eaten by that bear. If you're driving down the road and you see the car crossing the divider and it's coming your way, it triggers your fight or flight response. So our bodies are wired with this natural 911 alert system. Do something, and in that moment, within a split second, we're going to make the decision, I'm either going to fight that bear, if I think I need to, if I have a child with me or whatever, I have a stick, or maybe my best chances are to run. I remember when I was running at Rancho San Antonio, and I looked down because I don't like stepping in cow poop, so I'm looking down, and I'm running, and then I see this clump, and I'm going to step over it, but it moved. Went like this, and it turned out to be a tarantula. And I tell you, I jumped higher than I think anybody could ever jump, and farther, and I ran so fast, probably for another 10 or 15 minutes, far past the tarantula. But my fight or flight response kicked in at that moment and gave me everything I needed to do the superhuman thing, which is get out of there as quick as I can. So I have this snake. It's not real. But this snake represents that fight or flight response, and it could be unusual. And so here's the characteristics, and you've got that on your sheet. So what characterizes a type 1 type of stress is, 1, the source of the stress is immediate and identifiable. 2, it can be resolved in a short period of time. And 3, dealing with it is necessary for survival. And so the physical effects of that are that our heart starts pounding fast, and that's to circulate more blood to our muscles. Our breathing becomes faster. Again, that's to circulate more oxygen to our blood. Our digestion stops. All our bodily functions will stop in order to make all our blood and the functions go to our brain and our muscles for quick action. the muscles in our body tense so that we can move quickly. We sweat to cool our body. More blood flows to the primitive part of our brain, and that's where we are wired for that fight or flight response. And our pupils get bigger, our senses become stronger, and we feel this adrenaline rush. And that all happens within a split, even less than a split second. It is amazing how God has created our bodies to be able to do that for survival. Or you've heard about those stories where somebody's trapped under a car and all some people run over and they are able to pick up that car and rescue the person stuck underneath. It's that kind of superhuman, amazing thing. And then afterwards, when that happens, then our body has another system that when we're out of danger, there's this other nervous system response that's meant to bring our bodies back down. It automatically just lowers our blood pressure, slows down our breathing, our body functions come back, and we feel calm again, and we feel safe. And our body just does that without us having to tell it. It just automatically knows how to do it. I have to tell you that, a couple months ago, I remember my son was, I noticed his grades had went down, and I talked to him about it, and he had forgotten to turn in several assignments. And we went back and forth about it, and usually I don't need to remind him, he does really well, but he dropped the ball, and because he missed several assignments, his grade went down from an A or a B down to a C. And so I talked to him about it, he said, okay, I got it down, and then the other night I was reminding him a little bit, like, have you checked your homework due in this certain class? And he said, yeah, I did it. And then, but I didn't see him working on it. He says, I've got it, and I didn't. So that I knew it was coming time for bed, and I chose to remind him again. And then he goes, okay, I'll do it, and with the eye roll and the stomp. And my blood pressure just shot up. I was so frustrated. I was so angry. Within that split second, I was so irritated with him. And then I said, Luke, you know, I don't want to have to remind you. And I went into the mom spiel, the lecture. And then my husband said, well, wait a minute here. And as soon as my husband did that, I was like, oh, I'm done with this. And McKenna was there. And I grabbed a flashlight. And it was like 8:30. And I said, I'm going for a walk. And I stomped out the door. I'm sure I slammed it. I don't remember, but I'm sure I did. And I walked. And, you know, there went the night, obviously, and we were able to work that out. But I remember talking to my daughter the next day, and I said, gosh, McKenna, what was that? I mean, you know, it's, you know, one of those normal kind of family situations, but my response was here compared to really what the situation was. Now, in the moment, I didn't think it was, but believe it or not, that's my fight or flight response. My body doesn't know when it's a snake or when it's like this kind of snake, not that bad, this big stuffed animal snake. But my body will respond as if it's this all the time. I'm in danger. You're threatened in this moment. So we're going to move into that pretty soon. Now, does that relate a little bit? Let me share with you another kind of just example of how our physiology responds to our emotions. And I just learned this just Friday before I came up. I took a class on attachment disorders in children and why children who have been adopted, who were neglected, and have maybe some attachment issues grow up to be sometimes tough kids. And they push back a lot and they want to be the boss, and there's reason for that, and there's reason in the physiology. But let me give you examples. This instructor kind of, the illustration was that when you have a child who wants to be their own boss and really pushes back, isn't the type of child that tends to want to please you and do the right thing, but they're very independent, there's a reason for that. He said, one of the things you want to do is you want to try to not say no so much. You want to make a lot of your no's into yeses. And I actually think this is true of general parenting in general, that many times when we say no to kids, it really could be a yes, that we ought to save our no's for the big ones. No, you can't ride in the car without your car seat. No, you can't cross the street without holding my hand. But a lot of times, a no could really be stated as a yes. So anyway, close your eyes and just feel how this feels to you. No. 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 Now see how this feels to your body. Yes. 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 Okay, you can open your eyes. Did you feel a difference? What did you feel? What did you feel when I said no? Yeah, did your heart started beating faster? What else? Tense, a little tense? Yeah. You wanted to retreat. Yeah, I remember when the teacher did that, I actually felt my heart sink down. And when he said yes, I felt my heart rise. And so on an aside note, I think that's a great point in parenting, is that sometimes we say no to our child when it really isn't a no. Maybe it's like, can I have a cookie before dinner? And we say no, and the heart sinks, which is a legitimate, you know, no, you can't have a cookie for dinner. But how could you make that no statement a yes? Yes after dinner. So can I go outside and play? And if the answer is, well, you don't want them to play because they haven't done their homework, how do you turn that no into a yes? Yes after you've done your homework, right? Okay, so I practice that in the car as an aside. But it tells you, though, why sometimes your toddler falls apart in a tantrum when you say, no, you can't have that. Now, we do need to learn no's. Our children do need to learn no in life. But I hope that gives an illustration about why sometimes they fall apart like it is the end of the world, because sometimes that no right away jacks us up to that state of fight or flight, and then you get that from them, right? You get a fight or you get a flight. Okay, so let me go back. Without an outline, I will ramble. Okay, so the fight or flight response is effective, necessary for dealing with that danger situation, and it's just good for us in general. It helps us going in the day. So the bad part of this is that we're bombarded with almost every day with non-life-threatening but stressful situations that will trigger that fight or flight response. It could be a no. No, you didn't get that promotion. No, you can't work here anymore. No, I don't want to be in a relationship with you. It's traffic, it's deadlines at work and school, financial worries, kids, laundry, dinner. And this is known as type 2 stress. So even though we're not in danger, we perceive it as a threat. And the problem with the fight or flight response for type 2 stress is that, one, it's useless in most type 2 situations. So, for example, the fight or flight response isn't going to work when you're stuck on 101 in the middle of a pileup. You can't fight it. You can't run away from it, although you want to, right? It can make things worse, like blowing up at our coworkers if we use the fight or flight response, or our kids, or our spouse. Like I did, we develop a constant state of fight or flight, and it takes a serious toll on our mental, physical, emotional, and spiritual health. Let me go. So just as we saw how our body geared up, you know, our heart starts beating faster, circulates more blood, our bodies get, our muscles tense up. So all that response is geared up for that emergency, that true 911 situation, get out of that way of that speeding train or that car or the bear or the mountain lion or the snake. But in a type 2 situation where we're not really physically in danger, it doesn't do any good, but our body still is reacting. So all that tension in our muscle is still there, and it creates back pain, neck pain, headaches. Changes in breathing, we find ourselves short of breath, shallow breathing. I notice sometimes I'm driving, and I'm taking these really shallow breaths. My first thing is that I'm white-knuckling the steering wheel, and my jaw is tight. And then if I pay attention to my breathing, I can tell I'm kind of breathing in short breaths. Increased heart rate. I certainly feel my heart race at times, and I don't think I'm thinking about anything. But in a moment of quiet, oftentimes, that's when I'm feeling the stress, because all of a sudden I'm not thinking so much, but I'm listening to my body. High blood pressure, intestinal disturbance, irritable bowel, diarrhea, heartburn, prolonged heightened vision, you know, because we need to be able to see to get out of danger. But in a type 2 stress situation, we don't need that, but our senses are so in tune that it causes eye strain, weakened immune system, we'll get sick more often, catch colds fast more often, flu, take longer to recover when we are ill, inflammation and heart disease, sleep issues, fatigue, exhaustion, then the mental, emotional, behavioral, worry, anxiety, fear, panic, irritability, I know that in my own life definitely, And most of the time my kids point that out to me. Are you stressed? Because they see me so irritable. Impatience, bossiness, nervousness, forgetfulness, difficulty concentrating, anger turned inward or outward, being rigid, intolerant, critical, judgmental, defensive, sadness, depression, compulsive eating, drug and alcohol use, exhaustion, emotional, physical, kind of a sense of emptiness. And so that's the bad, that's the stress, that's the kind of toll it's taking on our health, because our body stays in that fight or flight response, and that calming, I'm gonna use the teddy bears. So the calming response that, let's say, we just got a close call. We were going to step into the middle of the street, and a car came zooming by, and our fight or flight response got us out of the way just in time. Then our body triggers that other circle of events that calms our body down. Well, with fight or flight response, and stress too, is that we are here normally, and we feel the whatever's triggering our stress, that type 2 stress, and our body goes up, and our blood pressure goes up, our breathing becomes fast, our pulse rate is up. And instead of being able to go down like in a type 1 situation once the stress is over and we're out of danger, our body stays up and starts to come down, but then the phone rings and it's a solicitor, and then we start to go down again, and the dinner's boiling over, and then it goes down again, and then somebody calls you and asks you if you can be on the PTA committee for this thing, and it goes down, and then your husband calls and says, I'm going to be late. And you know, we never come down to a place back down to zero, which was is what our body's meant to do. And so we're constantly going up and up and up. And to stay in that kind of state, even if we come down a little and go up, it's not enough time. And that whole notion of just being constantly like this is what's causing a toll on our body. Now, if you're young, you're not going to feel it as much as when you're older, colonoscopy age, like me. And I feel the effects of stress a lot more now than I did when I was younger. And I sense it a lot more. I can feel my irritability. I can feel my heart race. I feel my jaw tense. Stomach problems is my first cue. Usually it's not because I ate something. It's because something is triggering that stress. And most of the time that's a cue to me that something's wrong, or I snap. The other one is, you know, the other thing is you're really stressed out and you're trying to hold it together the best you can. And here's the part that's so frustrating, is because we try to hold it together, but if our physiology is all wound up, so there are times where I have a really bad day at work, I come home, I do carpool, I come home, I start dinner, I answer emails while I'm doing dinner, I'm helping kids with homework, and then my husband says something that's just a little insensitive, and I snap like that. When I think I've really held it together, and I can tell in that situation with Luke and my husband, and I stomped off, that wasn't really that situation. That was an accumulation of a lot of things and me holding it in. But my physiology doesn't let me hold it in, because in that moment, when I felt threatened, I acted in that fight or flight response. And I kind of did both. I fought them by being harsh and with my words, and I fled. I just left. And that wasn't a healthy way to deal with that situation. So that's the ugly part, is that then what we do is we often hurt our relationships because we're acting on that fight or flight response. And then that creates more. Then, you know, fortunately my family was really forgiving of me, but it could have easily, and it has in times, escalated to coldness and tension that lasts for more than 24 or 48 hours, leftover stuff. And then me feeling like, okay, you don't appreciate me. Well, maybe I'm not going to cook your dinner tomorrow. Or something. Okay, I don't want to really disclose where my mind can go, but it can go to some pretty dark places that I don't want to go to, but I go there. And what it does is it creates more hopelessness, a sense of loneliness, a sense that do I have a target painted on me? That, you know, it was kind of what, like Miriam was saying, you know, sometimes we feel like, God, where are you? Why did you give me this? Those kind of questionings. And I can spend hours, I can keep myself up at night thinking about that kind of thing, and it just keeps my stress going more and more. And what do you think? My blood pressure, my breathing is staying up that elevated level, and all it takes is the next car to cut me off, and I'm wreck-a-da-wreck-a-da. So It's not good. So that's the ugly part. And I have seen it in myself as just really ugliness when I, you know, I don't always act on it, but I sure do think about it. It's in my head. And that's not who I want to be. And I know that that's not, that Jesus has come to help me out of that, that that's not where I need to be. Let me say this, that so that ugly part is when, so we're using that those unhealthy strategies to deal with our stress, and that's when our primitive brain is in control. And there's times where we need that. I remember we were driving back from a vacation, and we had to go pick up my car. So it was Lee, McKenna, and I. McKenna was an infant. She was in the back seat, in the car seat. And we had to turn. We were picking my car up off hours, so it was nighttime, dark, on a really quiet road. And so we slowed down to make a left to turn into the car place, and the car behind us didn't see that we had stopped, and so I heard the screeching of the brakes, and then boom, they hit us from behind. Fortunately, they slowed down enough to where they just tapped us, but then they just pulled around and drove off. And I think normally I don't know how I would have acted, but I think because I had McKenna and it was the mother bear in me, I was like, let's go after them. You know, I wanted to go hunt down that car that could have hurt my baby. But that's kind of where we are wired. I think that's really part of what we do need in us. Like, or when, you know, when you're in a mall and all of a sudden your toddler who was right there is not there anymore, and that fight or flight response is really going to do anything it can to find that little child within seconds. So that's a necessary thing. We need that. When we sense danger, God's wired that into us. But we live in modern day society, so bears are usually not part of our everyday existence. Usually we're watching before we cross the street and we're being careful. We don't have to run away from dinosaurs. We don't have to hunt our food. So we're left with that, and our body doesn't know the difference between that type 1, 911 emergency, your life is in danger, protect yourself and defend yourself, I smell smoke, something like that, and when it's your bills are piling up, you've got a late fee on this, your boss is asking you to do more, your kids' grades are dropping, your roommate doesn't want to live with you anymore. Whatever it is, our body can't distinguish it, so we still react with that fight or flight response. So what can we do? So there are... let me say this first. So you have on your handout that pain is inevitable, but misery is optional. We cannot avoid pain, but we can avoid joy. That's from Tim Hansel. He wrote this book called You Gotta Keep Dancing. In the midst of life's hurts, you can choose joy. And he wrote this book after he, I think he's like a wilderness guy. He loves hiking. He loves being outdoors. And he fell, he had a terrible accident, and then as a result of that, he lived with chronic excruciating pain. He went through all the tests, multiple surgeries, there was nothing the doctors could do for him, and so his new life was to learn how to live with pain that couldn't be managed by medication, tried all kinds of therapies, physical therapy, mental counseling, all kinds of things, and it was just his lot in life to live with pain. So I like that quote because it's true. I think many times I want that Calgon moment. I want no pain in my life. I want no stress in my life. But as we learned this morning, that pain is a part of our life. And it is inevitable. Pain, stress, hard times. But misery is optional. And we can avoid pain. But isn't it interesting how we can avoid joy? We can really work ourselves up. I don't know if you've struggled with that, but I can really work hard at avoiding joy, that despite the comfort of good friends, despite a good word from the Lord, I can really stick my heels in hard and choose to be really miserable and have a pity party and feel sorry for myself. And I don't want you to feel guilty for that, because I think God can really meet us in those times of great despair. That's how a lot of the Psalms were written, where we are having a pity party. We feel like God has forsaken us. We say, why me? Why did you do this, God? And so I think God uses that. But that's his greatness. That's how wonderful and how loving he is to be able to come to wherever we are. We heard that in Nancy Woodward's story this morning. about how, you know, the first loss of her child, there was anger, and she was so honest and real about that. And then she had another loss, and how she, I loved when she said, when they were having to straddle two hospitals with two critically ill children, and they were just crying and saying, what do we do? You know, there's a point where you just weep because there's no words for how you're feeling. And she said, then Ben and I just decided we're going to be thankful. And all the way from that hour drive from San Francisco to Stanford, they were giving thanks. And then later on in her story, I loved how she said, later with another loss, she said, Ben and I had, this time it didn't hit us the same way because we had trained to look, we trained to look for joy. Do you remember her saying that? We trained to look for thankfulness. And I thought, wow, that is pretty amazing. And that's what we're going to do now. So that's where we're going to go into next. So there's two life skills for managing and reducing stress and increasing peace and love and joy. And this is from this book, Stress Free for Good. They actually have 10 tips, but I'm going to give you, I read the book, and I'm going to give you the two that they say are the best that you can do. That if you don't do anything else in this book, if you do these two, they can make a significant difference. And their goal is not to, again, they said, you know, the goal is that you just don't reach zero, like being able to manage stress and you're all good, but really also to increase joy, to increase peace in your life, to increase love. And a lot of the work they did was in the Stanford Medical Clinic. Fred actually did his PhD research project at Stanford Medical Clinic in their cardiac unit. So that was with patients who were struggling with diabetes, high blood pressure, heart surgery, all kinds of heart health-related problems. And, you know, they had tried surgery and they had tried weight management and things like that. But they said, we need something more for our patients because we're finding that they're reaching a certain level of getting better, but not enough to where they're really living healthy and optimally. And so he created this program. And his research has found that these things that I'm going to talk to you how to do now, actually, with, you know, the medication and the diet and the exercises, following their doctor's instructions, really took these patients to a whole nother level of managing their blood pressure, their breathing, any kind of breathing issues that also came along with having blood pressure issues or heart issues. So it's a lot rooted in just good medical physiological science. Okay, so the first one is belly breathing. So we're going to practice this together. And I want you to just get comfortable, and you want your legs to not be crossed. So uncross your legs. And I want you to put your hands on your tummy. Okay, and then you're going to inhale, and you want to imagine that your belly is like a big balloon. So you want your hands right above your belly button. You want to imagine that your belly is a big balloon that you're slowly going to fill with air. Okay, and while you slowly inhale, you're blowing up that balloon, and you should feel the rise of your belly. And as you exhale, slowly, your hands are going to fall. Okay, so your belly is relaxed. Do it again. You inhale, and your hands rise. And you exhale, and they fall. Okay, and do it one more time. Belly breathing gives our body the signal that we're not in danger and that we can calm down and relax. It triggers that other response that naturally happens in that type 1 stress situation that our body naturally does. As soon as we're out of danger, our body goes, okay, breathing can be relaxed, blood pressure goes down, more oxygen goes to our brain. Belly breathing automatically does that. One of the things we teach in counseling when somebody is struggling with anxiety is we teach them to breathe. And I tell them, especially with little kids, I say, you know, there's a magic trick. It's impossible for your body to feel anxious and for you to be able to breathe at the same time. They work in opposites. So if you're anxious, you don't breathe very well. But if you breathe calmly, it tells your body, you can't be anxious. I know you want to be. Your brain wants to be, but you can't. And it's and that's one of the kind of magic bullets we give for dealing with anxiety, along with thinking, but and changing the way we think. But breathing right away can start triggering that other response in our body to bring peace and calm. We're not in danger. The other thing it does is, you know, when I said our primitive brain is at work to fight or flight and defend ourselves from danger, that part of the brain has no ability to think ahead, to think logically, rationally, because if a car is coming at you or a bear is coming at you, you don't want to stop and take about 5 minutes to weigh your options and think about what you need to do. You have to think fast and get out of there. So it shuts down the higher functioning part of your brain that's responsible for problem solving, creative thinking, reasoning, planning ahead, remembering the past, weighing the consequences. All those executive functions are shut down because in that moment you don't need them. You just need to act fast and get out of danger. When you belly breathe, especially after you've been stressed, you trigger your brain to go back into that higher functioning part that can go, I'm really angry right now and I'm really hurt. What are my options? I really want to punch this person out. I really want to run. I really want to quit my job because my boss is being unfair. I really want to just book a flight to France and get away from my life. And the higher functioning part of our brain is going to say, no, you can't do that. But if our physiology is all revved up, you don't deserve this. You shouldn't stay in this situation. You're in danger. You got to get out. This is bad. Get out, get out, get out. Then we think irrationally. We tend to think irrationally because all you want to do is fight that situation, fight that person, or run away from it. And so if in that moment you can belly breathe, you can all of a sudden tell that fight or flight response, it's not this. It really is this. And I'm not in danger. I have some options. Let me think about it. It gives you that, maybe that split second before you snap to be able to think, I have a choice here. I don't have to respond in the way my fight or flight body wants to tell me to do. And I think it also gives us opportunity, like I think we'll read later in Colossians, to let the peace of Christ dwell in us. Because for a lot of times I go to God and I pray because I'm so mad or I'm so frustrated or I'm so stressed out. And I know verses like this, but it doesn't, what I know in here isn't matching in here. And so what I've been trying to do lately is before I go to that, before I go to prayer, before I go to time in the Word, before I even just try to sort things out, I do take a couple moments to belly breathe because it calms me to a place where I can listen to this and it reaches me. But if our blood pressure's up, if our engine is revving really high, oftentimes nothing is going to work. And that's what I found with my students. I saw that nothing was working. They knew the right things to do. I could role play it with them. But if they went into a classroom situation where a teacher said, where's your homework? And it was a neutral statement. Maybe they said it with a little kind of authoritarian voice. It took my students all the way back to where at home they hear, you're no good. You're a loser. I'm sorry you were born. You've made my life nothing but problems. You can't do anything right. And so many of my students, I came to realize, you know, they grew up in a constant fight or flight situation. When you're a child and you've got parents yelling at you, criticizing you, and I don't mean just like, you know, you didn't take out the trash today, that kind of criticism. It's more, I wish you were never born. You're the one reason why I drink. You're the reason why I do drugs. I wish I'd never met your father because of you. I mean, all kinds of, you know, my students hear that thing constantly. And when they were little, or they heard their parents fighting, or they saw their parents using drugs, or they saw violence in their home, or they were the victims of violence, or they go home now and they still are the victims of violence, it triggers their fight or flight response. So it makes sense to me when they go into class and a teacher says, you do your homework, you're going to get a zero on this. It triggers their fight or flight response based on all that physiology, right? And it made sense to me that I can't expect them to, even though they know the right thing, they don't want to be dropping the F-bomb. They don't want to be hitting somebody at school or whatever. But their fight or flight response is so high and so constant that that's what they do because they feel threatened in that moment. And so what I am now doing instead is I'm trying to teach them things like this to understand that in that moment when they want to scream, swear, fight, break something, damage property, hurt somebody, use. Drugs and alcohol are a great way to escape. That's a great, it works as a flight response to get away, to lose your troubles and your worries and to feel better momentarily. I need to help them cope with their fight or flight response first before I start helping them with all these other things. Okay, let's go on to the second one. Any questions? Okay. So belly breathing is good to use. Let me go before we go on. So belly breathing will give your body the signal that you're not in danger. You can calm down, relax, engages that higher functioning part of your brain to think more creatively. What are my options? I don't have to yell to get out of the situation. What else can I do? Use this. This is a good life skill to use when you feel angry, when you feel nervous, before you speak your mind and say something you think you might regret later, when you need help falling asleep, and any time you notice that your breathing is a little shallow or rapid or you feel your heart racing. I used this last night because I was thinking about today and I couldn't sleep very well. And I tell you, the last thing I remember doing last night was just practicing belly breathing, so I think it worked. So the second one is thankfulness. Thankfulness is gratitude, appreciation, counting our blessings, noticing the good, praising God. Stress often makes us lose sight of what's good in our lives. It increases our sense of suffering and in turn increases our stress. Being thankful reverses the fight or flight stress response and calms our mind and body. It retrains our brain to scan for good instead of only the bad. It opens our heart and eyes to see God in our lives and to tell a different story about our pain. It counteracts selfishness and narcissism. And by that I mean is that I know for me when I get in that stressful, poor me, I'm a target, what's going on, I don't deserve this, I'm only trying to do good, but I only get bad, and it just goes boom, 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 boom. There is a point where we do say, you know, I deserve better than this. I don't like especially the kind of stress that we didn't really invite ourselves, but just kind of happens to us. We kind of go, I don't deserve this. Oftentimes that's my first thing. I didn't deserve this. I didn't ask for this. Why am I in this situation? And I just can get myself stuck in this cycle of being really stuck in my misery, choosing not to choose joy. And I spin and I actually make things worse. I will pick a fight with somebody, I will do something to make myself feel worse, and I'll look for sympathy, and if I don't get it, then I'll feel more alone and more angry and more resentful. And there's this narcissism, like, I'm the only one in this world going through this, and it's that sense of shaking your fist at God and saying, why and where are you? And I don't understand this, and I don't like this. It's kind of like, I guess an adult version, it's a tantrum. So thankfulness can take us out of that. Let me read you from Tim's book. And he has it under the heading of gratitude and appreciation. If we are but willing to learn, our disadvantages can renew a deeper appreciation for the simple things in life. I remember one day visiting with Johnny Erickson Tata, the gifted author, artist, singer, who has been a quadriplegic since a diving accident when she was 17. It was one of those days when my pain level was excruciatingly high, almost intolerable. At times, I had difficulty focusing on our conversation. The day seemed incredibly long. When I got home, I was so worn out, I collapsed at the kitchen table and indulged myself in a bout of self-pity. As hard as it is to admit, it even crossed my mind that Johnny was better off than I am because she feels no pain. Suddenly, my younger son, Joshua, came running in the room and jumped into my arms. As I hugged him, I had a stunned and embarrassed realization. Johnny, who had been so buoyant and cheerful all day, would never be able to experience giving or receiving such a hug. Perhaps for the first time in my life, I realized that being able to give my son a hug was the greatest gift, and it was not a right. That evening, I began to look at my pain from the other end of the tunnel. I realized again that I was blessed with a continual reminder that all of life is a gift, and even the simplest acts and events are meant to be treasured. And I think that was what Miriam was saying today. I know that I am a slow learner, but my appetite for wonder has never been greater. My appreciation for so-called ordinary things has never been richer. Perhaps I could have learned these things otherwise, but I think not. In my more honest moments, I realized that some things I thought I had just had to endure were really hidden blessings meant to teach me how special life is itself. And last week when Ryan was teaching at Pulse, that's one of the greatest things I got from his teaching. I know a lot of people missed it. I emailed Ryan afterwards and I said, you've got to do this again because it was so good. I know a lot of people are watching the 49ers and being faithful to their team, but it was such a great message, especially they lost, you know, but because he talked about how Jesus has come to give us salvation now, definitely for the future. This life isn't the whole, this isn't the whole dinner, dessert, appetizer. We've got a whole wonderful life ahead where there's no pain, no sorrow. There is joy, there's peace, there's wholeness, and we look forward to that. But Jesus is offering us salvation and hope and love and joy and peace now. And there are times in my head where I know that, but I'm having such a pity party that I'm like, no, I really don't know that. I don't know that. I want to know that, Lord, and I can't get myself to there. And I'm coming to slowly understand in my old age that some of it is because I am working so hard. I am working so hard to get there, to do whatever it takes to get there. But we can encounter Jesus each day, and a lot of it, I really do think, has to start before we know all those other things. Because my guess is you all know pretty much how to deal with your stress. You probably know when you're doing too much and maybe you said yes to too many things. And maybe like what Miriam said, there's some things, times where simplify is the answer. And my guess is you know that. Or you know when you might need to take an exercise class or find a friend and go for a walk. Or maybe you need to cut certain foods out of your diet or you need to increase your sleep. We all know that. There's books, there's all kinds of tapes. And yet, why are we still more stressed than ever when there's all these resources available to us? And I think sometimes it's because our physiology is running so high that all that good stuff that we know how to do isn't having the kind of impact that it can because we're constantly in that fight or flight mode. And now when I'm noticing, and it takes practice, so here's the thing, we've got to do this. So when you practice gratitude, oh, we're going to get there in a minute. Let me go back. You know that you have that verse in 2 Corinthians, we have this treasure in earthen vessels. And that Tim Hansel quote helped me realize that, that the surpassing greatness of the power of God may be of God and not from ourselves. We are afflicted in every way, but not crushed, perplexed, but not despairing, persecuted, but not forsaken, struck down, but not destroyed, always caring about in the body the dying of Jesus, that the life of Jesus may also be manifested in our body. And I was talking about belly breathing earlier and how belly breathing gives you the opportunity to tell a different story, not a victim story, a poor me, I'm the target, this was hard things done to my life, and so now this is why I am, and so I can't help the way I rage out at people because of whatever. We have a new story to tell because of the cross. We have a victory story, and Jesus' story is our story. Sometimes we don't live in that story. It's hard, but I think I want to encourage you that the simple act of this belly breathing can take you to a place where then, God, you can start to be able to see that you're not a victim, that we have a choice. We have an option of telling a different story. Tim Hansel could have come home and stayed in that pity party. But he was able, through Thanksgiving, to tell a different story. I think belly breathing helps us do that too, get to a thankful place. So let's go to practicing now. So just knowing about the importance of breathing and being thankful is not enough to create change. So, for example, if you're teaching your son or daughter how to drive, it's not just enough for them to read the manual. They can read the manual, get 100% on their test, but that's not going to make them a good driver, right? They've got to practice. If I want to be a great singer or I want to learn to play the piano, I could know everything about reading notes and timing and all that, but if I don't practice, I won't become a good pianist. So But you have to be careful because knowing is not the same thing as doing. So the reason why belly breathing and practicing thankfulness is it's not a class where you have to spend more time or money on. It's not going to really take more time out of your day. When I was a young mom and I had my first baby and I could barely take a shower, I felt so overwhelmed and so stressed. If somebody told me to take an exercise class, I would have just jumped on them and said, "What do you mean take an exercise class? I can't even take a shower or go to the bathroom." So that's what the nice thing about belly breathing and being thankful is that there's nothing else that needs to change in your life, really, except for you to be willing to maybe try to practice this and give it a chance. I think the thing is it takes 21 days to create a new habit. So if you would give it 21 days, and I have something to help you with that in a minute. But I want to read you a story about resistance to change, because we don't like change, and even something as small as this can create a resistance. So I want to tell you a story about a conversation between a teacher and a student. And the student was going to this therapeutic workshop to help them with their back pain. And at the break, the student was saying, she went up to the teacher and she was saying that her hips hurt after doing the exercises. So the teacher gave her an alternative. And she said, no, she couldn't do that because it would hurt her neck. And so the teacher gave her another idea, but she said, no, she couldn't do that because her knees were really bad. And then the teacher gave her another idea and another idea. And every time the teacher gave her a new idea or an alternative, she turned it down and said, nope, I can't do that. And finally the teacher said, I think your intention to say the same is greater than your intention to change. And that's where you have on your handout that greater than. I see that on Facebook a lot. A lot of times people post, Brad Pitt is greater than somebody else or something like that. But anyway, but many times we have to be aware that when, if you're feeling resistance, if you're thinking, breathing, I've tried that. I tried that in my yoga class. Or that's like meditation, that's a little too weird for me. Or thankful, I'm thankful. It's not gonna work. I just want to challenge you to think about whether your intention to say the same is greater than your intention to change, because changing is hard. If all of a sudden now I know I have a choice, instead of just getting mad at somebody and blowing up and walking away and thinking that solved the problem, if now that I'm confronted with maybe I need to have a more gracious response that might take a little self-control, might take more energy, might take me time away from something I want to do to be patient and loving with my child and when he needs help on his homework, that's a harder road to go, and I understand that. So I understand that there's going to be resistance to wanting to change, because it's not an easy path. It's not just breathe, be thankful, and then my stress will melt away and it'll be a Calgon moment. I know it's not going to be like that. It's going to call upon us a different kind of strength, because now we have a choice. But I want to encourage you that along with that comes some other blessings, along with the thankfulness. Let me share a couple with you. Actually, let me go on to, let's do this practice for a minute. So when you do belly breathing, if you would risk trying this, you want to just commit to maybe 10 minutes a day doing some belly breathing. It won't even take you actually 10 minutes. 3 or 4 breaths of belly breathing a day. You can do it in the morning when you first wake up. You can do it while you're sitting at the computer. You can do it when you're in the car at a stoplight. Sometimes I do it in church because it helps me focus a little bit. But belly breathing is, you want to practice at first when you're not under stress. And the reason why is because it's harder when you're under stress. You're going to have to fight it, and you're probably going to need to do more than three or four to kind of counteract that type 2 stress you might be feeling. So do it when you're relaxed. And if you can just do it once a day, 3 or 4 belly breaths, it ought to take a minute. And if you commit to doing that in the day, maybe after day 3 or 4, when you're sitting at a stoplight, or you're lying down in bed getting ready to go to sleep, you may think about it again, and then go ahead and do it. And the hope is that you're going to do it a little bit more in your day. But all you have to aim for is once a day. Sometimes, once in a while, you want to practice for 5 or 10 minutes. If you find like, wow, this feels good, as I'm getting ready to fall asleep, this is relaxing me, maybe you're going to do it for 5 or 10 minutes. Practice that once in a while if you can. Then when you practice thankfulness, you want to write down or share three things you're thankful for. So you either write it down or you share it with somebody. Doesn't need to be profound, doesn't need to be complicated, but it does need to be specific. So for example, I'm thankful for the hug from my son after a long day. I'm thankful that I'm at this retreat and I don't have to cook for five meals. I'm thankful for the warmth of the sunshine. So you want to be really specific. And I'm going to pass these out right now, actually. So these are little, you take one if you want. If this will help you, you can tuck it in your purse, put it by your bed at night. But it's a place for you to write down three things each day. And if you fill it up, you will have gotten to close to 21 days, front and back. Or you can also share it with a friend. So I'm going to let McKenna pass those around. We have plenty. You can take more. I think you can take two, probably, if you want it, if you want to go practice longer. The verse that you have on that back page, if you have a, I guess now when I'm reading scripture, now that I've thought more about breathing and peace, and the more I thought about being thankful, now what jumps out at me at scripture, whenever I read scripture that has being thankful and having joy and having peace, there's so much scripture that where that's all together. And I don't think it's just by chance that breathing brings peace and that thankfulness can increase our joy and can take us out of our stuck places. It does something in our bodies physiologically. I think that that somehow God in his just perfect design must have known that. And then we have it written out for us. So if you look at that verse in Philippians, and if you have a pencil, underline where you see there's joy or thanksgiving or anything about thoughts. I'm going to read it out loud. Rejoice in the Lord always. I will say it again, rejoice. Let your gentleness be evident to all. The Lord is near. Do not be anxious about anything, but in every situation, by prayer and petition, with thanksgiving, present your requests to God. And the peace of God, which transcends all understanding, will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus. Finally, brothers and sisters, whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable, if anything is excellent or praiseworthy, think about such things. And when I read this verse, it just means so much more to me now. And before I read it, I often just take my belly breaths. And right now, I want to just give you an opportunity. We're going to take three belly breaths, and then you can either use your little booklet or write on something else, but then you're going to take a minute to write three things you're thankful for, okay? So first, we're going to start with a belly breath. You can either, if you know where your belly is, you don't have to put your hands there, but I need to do it to kind of focus me to start. Okay, so you're going to take, and I'm not going to tell you because we all breathe at different rates, but go ahead and take your deep breath in, and your belly should rise like you're filling up a balloon and then coming down. Rising slow and down. And your hands should fall, or you should just be able to mentally feel your tummy going up and down. This is a great thing to pair when you pray, because it just brings you into a place where you're able to hear God a little bit more. And then when you're done with your three or four breaths, then just think about three things, specific things that you're thankful for. And then I want you to write them down. You can keep writing. I'm just going to close this up for a little bit. They have found that thankfulness does more than improve our health. They found that in a study that participants who wrote down three good things each day for 1 week were happier and less depressed at the 1 month, 3 month, and 6 month follow-up. And even when stopping the exercise and they didn't have to write down three things anymore, they said that they remained significantly happier and showed higher levels of optimism. And I don't know if any of you have ever played that game Tetris. It's a computer, or you can play it on any device actually, but it's got these different shaped blocks that are dropping down, and you have to fit them to fit so that knots off a block in a row. And it's called the Tetris effect. And so they found that when they had participants play Tetris for like an hour or 2 hours, and they sent them off, that the participants said that even after they stopped playing, all around them, whether in the grocery store, at work, or folding their laundry, that they still saw things in their life like a Tetris piece. And I'm like that. I play Boggle sometimes to kind of de-stress, I have to say. And so with Boggle, you're trying to find four or five or three letters in a row, D-O-G, G-O-D, C-A-T. And so after I'm playing that for like 20 minutes, I'll say, Luke, it's time to go to bed, B-E-D. And my head is just functioning like that. That's what practicing these kinds of things do. Practicing thankfulness, being thankful every day, has this amazing way of shifting our mind off of the poor me, why me, this is a season of awfulness, to, wow, I have a choice. I see God in the midst of this. This isn't fun. This isn't something I wanted, but I see God at work. It's the difference between choosing pain or choosing joy, choosing misery. So that's part of the benefits of, and why practicing is so important. Now let me just say that if you have experienced some significant trauma in your life, like a car accident, cancer, a loss of a loved one, this all isn't meant that you now need to start practicing thankfulness to, because there is a time where, as we talked about this morning, a season of grieving, of loss, and there sometimes you do need to not say, I've got to choose to kind of get out of my sadness. There's a time where you need to grieve and heal. And part of healing means you have to grieve and mourn first, or whatever it is, get through. So this isn't to say that this is going to be an antidote. So just having to say that, it's more for this type 2 stress in our life where it's the bills, it's worries, it's anxiety, it's where we're feeling like we want to fight back. And in that moment, we don't realize it, but it's that constant bombardment of every day. And not that we have to get rid of that, because sometimes we can't. And so then what we do next is we figure out, do I have a choice here? In this moment, can I choose to bring these down and look at it a different way? And to be able to get there, I really do think that the belly breathing and the being thankful not only will get you there, but it will do that other part, an increasing love, increasing joy. And the other benefits of that is that then, and you can play it out, you know this, that when you don't respond to your spouse with a quick angry word, when you help your child with patience and you get that hug back from them, that generates more positive things. It takes you on this whole other cycle than this one, right? The one where we're angry, we're fighting and fleeing and spouting off and kind of avoiding joy and falling into misery. I'm just going to end our time. We have extra time, and I'm going to be up here if anybody wants to come and chat, but otherwise you have some extra time to just go enjoy being outside. Thank you for coming, but let me just pray for us, and I'm going to pray from Ephesians, actually. And I'm going to start us off with just breathing again. You're going to get lots of practice today. Okay, so take one or two deep belly breaths. For this reason, I bow my knees before the Father, that he would grant us, according to the riches of his glory, to be strengthened with power through his Spirit in the inner man, so that Christ may dwell in our hearts through faith, and that we, being rooted and grounded in love, may be able to comprehend with all the saints what is the breadth and the length and the height and the depth, and to know the love of Christ, which surpasses knowledge, that we may be filled up to all the fullness of God. Now to him who is able to do exceedingly abundantly beyond all that we ask or think, according to the power that works within us, to him be the glory forever and ever.